We are in the fourth week of a sermon series that we are going through, basically looking at what are our core values as a church. And we have a very crisp and yet a very rich sentence which kind of captures our core values very simply. So simply put, we are a gospel-centered, missional community that loves the city. And if this is your first time in this sermon series, or if this is your first time in New City, we have these cards in which we have actually written down and unpacked our values. So I'm going to just request Asha to kind of distribute these cards. If you'd like one, just pick up a copy. You might want to keep this. This is who we are as a church. This is who we desire to be as a church. And we've been spending about 2 to 3 weeks on each of these three core values. We spent 2 weeks looking at what does it really mean to be gospel-centered. That was the first core value. Last week, Felix began looking at what does it mean to be a missional community. And the key thought that Felix communicated to us last week is simply this. For far too long, we have seen evangelism, or sharing the good news, or what Jesus did for us as individuals. We've seen evangelism as a lone ranger, kind of a solitary exercise. And this has often made evangelism uncomfortable, awkward, and burdensome for some of us. But when we say that we are a missional community, we're saying that evangelism is teamwork. We do it together as a community of Jesus' disciples who love each other as Christ loved us. And Felix showed us last week that even Jesus did not do missions as an isolated individual. You know, right at the beginning of his ministry, he put together this team of disciples around him. He led this team of disciples, and they were a missional community, and they reached out to the world together as a team. And we see that even in the early church, people did this as a missional community. It was a team project. And so the disciples of Jesus, if I may submit, were a gospel-centered missional community. Jesus was the leader, of course, and he was teaching them about the cross. He was teaching them about who he was, the Son of God himself. And he was teaching them about his mission, that he would go on to die on the cross. And everything what Jesus was doing, especially with his disciples, was pointing to the cross, on the exchange that would happen where Christ would be punished for our sins. And so clearly, they were a gospel-centered community. And they were doing missions together as a community. So the disciples of Jesus were a gospel-centered missional community. And that's what we desire to be. Now, even though they were led by Christ himself, and even though they were a gospel-centered missional community, the 12 disciples who were closest to Jesus experienced sharp conflict. You heard me right. The disciples fought among themselves. In the 3 years that Jesus spent here on earth in public ministry, that is going around in towns and villages preaching and healing people and talking about his death and resurrection and talking about the kingdom of God. And as even as Jesus was doing all that with this team with him, these disciples fought among themselves at least on 3 different occasions. And that's what we're going to be looking at this morning. We're going to be talking about coping with conflict. A missional community is a lot of people coming together on mission, loving each other. But I think the truth and the reality is, in the process, we do hurt each other. You know, we do fight with each other. We are envious of each other. That's reality. And we're going to be having a very, very honest conversation about how does a missional community cope with conflict. There was conflict among the disciples of Jesus. They were comparing themselves with each other. They were competing with each other, and there was conflict. Conflict, comparison, and competition. If the 12 disciples of Jesus, who were in such close proximity to Christ himself, did end up fighting with each other on at least three different occasions, and that's what we're going to be looking at this morning, we have to accept the reality that we too will experience conflicts within each other as a community. You know, there's this joke that I always like to share when we talk about how do we cope with community as a conflict as a community. You know, there's this very popular verse in the Bible, which I'm sure all of us know, that where two or three are gathered in his name, in the name of Jesus, he is there in their midst. And I have a slight variation of that. I just say where two or three are gathered, there is conflict. It is inevitable. What defines us as a community is not that we don't have conflict, but what defines us as a community is how do we cope with conflict? How do we deal with conflict? We are sinners saved by grace. None of us are perfect. We are all messed up people, learning to grow in our faith and in our love for Jesus. Messed up people make mistakes. Messed up people do become jealous. Messed up people can be selfish and can ruin a community. And to expect that in a community, in a church community, that there would be no conflict at all is to underestimate our own sinfulness. However, while we will experience conflict, that's reality, we will not be defined by conflict. We will be defined as a community that can reconcile with one another despite conflicts because of the power of the gospel, because of the power of the love of Jesus that is at work in us. And I want to be very honest in acknowledging the reality of conflict, comparison, and competition among ourselves. And that's why I think it's important to study the conflict that the disciples experienced when they were walking with Jesus. Jesus began his public ministry publicly, preaching, teaching, healing people, delivering demon-possessed people, and all of that he started doing when he was roughly 30 years of age. And he was crucified on the cross and rose again from the dead. And that period was about 3 years. And in this 3 years, as Felix was sharing with us last week, Jesus lived with his disciples as a missional community. And in these 3 years, the disciples fought among themselves on three distinct occasions. The first conflict was in the early stages as a team. Jesus had just begun his ministry. He just put together this team of disciples, and that's the first conflict. We're going to be looking at that this morning. The second quarrel came towards the end of his life, a few days, perhaps weeks, before Jesus entered Jerusalem. And we know that it is in Jerusalem that Jesus was crucified to death. The third conflict happened just before Jesus was arrested, soon after Jesus had instituted the Passover or communion. Jesus had instituted the Lord's Supper, not the Passover. He was observing the Passover, and then he went on to introduce the Lord's Supper, communion. We're going to be looking at that. We're going to be participating in communion this morning. We're going to be looking at these three conflicts. And what I'd like to do for us is simply this. We're going to be looking at the three conflicts among the disciples. I want to talk about our conflicts as a missional community. And third, we want to look at why we have conflicts and how do we cope with our conflicts as a missional community. The conflicts the disciples had, the conflicts we have, and why do we fight, and how do we cope with our conflicts as a missional community. So let's look at the three conflicts. The first one, as I was sharing, started off early on in the public ministry of Jesus when he had put the disciples together. That's from Luke. It's a book in the New Testament, Luke chapter 9, verses 43 to 48. And Jesus begins to explain to his disciples his purpose, the goal for which he came, which is to die as a sacrifice of atonement for your sins and mine. And Jesus starts talking about how he used to go to the cross and how he would be killed on the cross and how he would rise again. As Jesus starts introducing his coming death on a cross, we see that an argument started among the disciples as to which of them would be the greatest. And Jesus, takes him aside and says, whoever welcomes this child in my name welcomes me. He takes the child as an example, and you must be like children. And that's Jesus helping these disciples get over their conflict. It's amazing, isn't it? Jesus talks about his death on a cross, and the disciples are keen to figure out who is the greatest among all.
That's the first conflict.
Then soon after this, Jesus goes from village to village, town to town, preaching the good news, healing the sick. And he's about to enter Jerusalem. And that's when the second conflict happens. And that's from another book in the New Testament called Matthew. Matthew was another disciple of Jesus. He wrote an account of the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. That's Matthew chapter 20, verses 17 to 20. And I'm going to just quickly narrate what happens here, rather than read through the entire portion. And Jesus was about to enter Jerusalem. So he calls his disciples together and he tells them, we're going to go to Jerusalem. And in Jerusalem, the Son of Man, that's Jesus referring to himself, is going to be delivered to the chief priests. And Jesus then gives a very graphic account of what's going to happen to him on the cross. He says, I'm going to be mocked, I'm going to be flogged, and I'm going to be crucified. And on the third day, I will rise to life. And just as soon as Jesus finishes this, in walks the mother of James and John. They were called the sons of Zebedee. The mother walks with these two sons, her two sons, and she makes a request of Jesus. Jesus, can one of my sons sit on your right-hand side and one of my sons sit on your left-hand side when your kingdom comes? And the ten hear about this. And says, you went in private, spoke to Jesus, and cut a deal for yourself? What about us? We have forsaken everything too, and we've been walking with Jesus. How can you do this? And the Bible uses some very nice words to describe it. It says, when the ten heard, they were indignant with the two brothers. And there's a quarrel festering. There is a conflict brewing there right at the foot of the cross with Jesus. And Jesus brings them together. And he says, you know, the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to be great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be the first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom to many. The third conflict happens even closer to the foot of the cross. And this is probably a few hours before Jesus is arrested. Jesus institutes the communion, the Lord's Supper. He takes the bread, he breaks it, and he says, this is my body that is broken for you. He takes the cup and he said, this is the new covenant in my blood that's going to be shed for you. And he goes on to say, one of you is going to betray me, and I will go and die a gruesome death at the hands of the Roman soldiers. And soon after Jesus finishes unpacking all of this, we read in Luke 22, verses 24 to 28, a dispute also rose among them as to which of them was considered to be the greatest. And Jesus goes on to explain to them that if you desire to be great, you must make yourself the least. And these are the three conflicts that the disciples have among themselves. The Bible is also unapologetic of the other conflicts that happen. We see a lot of conflicts happening in the Old Testament. And even in the New Testament, we see that Paul and Barnabas in the early church, as they were really leading the church planting movement, go through a period of conflict. We also see that Paul and Peter have a confrontation in which Paul has to confront and talk to Peter about some of the wrong things that he is doing. We see conflict everywhere in the Bible. Comparison, competition, and conflict. It was there in Jesus' disciples. I want to look at the second thing that I want to unpack for us this morning, which is to look at our conflicts, the conflicts we experience as a missional community. And I want to lead by sharing some of my own personal experiences. About 3 years ago, three of us to be precise, who were church planters in Mumbai, began meeting together, and there was a wonderful organization called City to City that started facilitating these meetings. So we would meet together, three church planters in Mumbai, trying to plant similar kind of gospel-centered churches. We would meet together once every quarter for 2 days, and we did that for a good 3 years. And we still do that. We still keep meeting. This was a wonderful community of church planters. We sat under some great teaching, some great coaching, some really good insights on how do we work on a church plant. We were very like-minded. We had a lot of food together. We had a lot of fun together. But even as all of this going, even as beautiful as this community was, I can still very vividly recalling myself slowly beginning to compare myself with these other two church planters. And very slowly, even before I realized it, subconsciously, I began competing with them. There was no conflict. It didn't lead to conflict, thankfully, maybe because we were just meeting once in 3 months for a couple of days. Maybe if you had met more often, maybe we would have seen conflict too. But I was beginning to see and compare our church growth with their church growth that they were experiencing, with the things that they were going through. And there was a season, and I'll be very honest and admit this, there was a season where I came under a lot of self-created pressure in comparing myself with them and trying to keep pace or actually do better than some of the things that they were going. And there were these thoughts that they're growing faster than us, they're doing things better than us, that I have to be very honest in admitting that I struggled with in that season. Thankfully, by the grace of God, I was able to see that, and the gospel worked in my heart. And I began to see how sinful I was and how desperately I needed grace in my lives. So there is some level of comparison, competition, and even conflict that is inevitable in every community. I mean, take marriage. That's the closest community. I don't yet know of a marriage where there is no conflict. Maybe there's no comparison and competition. Maybe there is. But there is not even marriage. The closest, the most intimate, the most beautiful of human relationships is filled with conflicts when we look at it practically from a day-to-day way, a day-to-day life. And New City Church is no different. We will be extremely naive or extraordinarily pretentious to assume that conflict is not happening in our community. You know, in the New City context, our gap group leaders, people who lead our groups, are very vulnerable, and this is a real challenge, to compare between one another, each other groups. That's inevitable. That's just us living our sinful nature out, desperately crying out for God's grace to change us, to transform us. Or take this really beautiful initiative called New City Collective that we've just started. And every musician in New City is welcome to be a part of New City Collective. We were really blessed by the amazing bunch of musicians who led us into worship this morning. And that's just maybe 1/4 of our music and worship team. There are so many more people. And we don't want to hide these musicians in the church. We want them to go and serve the city as much as they are serving in the church. And every member of our worship team is welcome to be part of New City Collective. And we want to give everyone the opportunity to kind of go out and play in the city at gigs, at pubs, wherever, and to really serve the city. And that's one way we express our love for city. That's one way we live out the value that we are a missional community. Now, as beautiful as this is, I will be very surprised if there is no comparison, competition, and conflict among the different musicians who are part of New City Collective. I'm getting to play more than he does. He's getting to sing more than I do, or she's getting to play more than I do. And these are realities. We've got to accept them. We have to face these realities because this is our sinful nature. To begin with, we are all naive that conflict will not exist in a church community like us, and we're just naive. But when conflict does hit us hard, we go from being naive to becoming pretentious, and we just pretend that these conflicts aren't happening, when deep within, conflict is simmering to a boil. Let's go back to the 12 disciples and us. So what's wrong? Is the gospel powerless to change us? Is the gospel impotent? Not at all. And that brings us to the third and last part of the talk. And if you're wondering what these chairs are, we're going to be having an interview pretty soon. But I want to close in the next 5 minutes. That brings us to the third thing that I want to share for us in this sermon this morning. Why we have conflict and how do we cope with our conflicts as a missional community. What we see in Luke chapter 22 with the passage we looked at is incredible. Jesus institutes the communion. He takes the bread, breaks it, and says, "My body is going to be broken for you like this." And this portion is described in verses 19 to 22. And it's unbelievable what happens in verse 23. A dispute also arose among them as to which of them was considered to be the greatest. The disciples are fighting for power and position at the foot of the cross. Here is Christ, the Son of God, who is God Himself, giving up everything to die, bearing the punishment for our sins upon Him. Christ gave up everything for us on the cross. Even the last strip of garment on Him was stripped away from Him. The King of Heaven, the Son of God, God Himself gives everything. And at the foot of the cross, the disciples fight as to who would be the greatest. How could this happen? How could the disciples be so unmindful of this great, so great a sacrifice? How could we be so unmindful of so great a sacrifice that Christ was to make on the cross? The answer to this question and the solution to the problem are both in the passages that we've been looking at this morning. Why were the disciples so unmindful? Jesus explains the cross. Jesus institutes the communion. The disciples hear the gospel. It enters their head, but it doesn't come home to their hearts. When the gospel remains merely in our heads, and when it doesn't come home to our hearts, we tend to be indifferent to the cross. All of us who consider ourselves to be followers of Jesus, we know the gospel in our heads. But there are moments where the gospel doesn't engage the affections of our heart. That's not the center of our lives, and we slip back into our old sinful ways. That's why we fight among ourselves, and the disciples fought among themselves. So what's the solution? How do I get the gospel to travel down from my head to my heart? How do I move from merely having an intellectual knowledge of the gospel to actually having a real experience of it? In all three instances where the disciples fought among themselves, Jesus, if we read the passages carefully, gives one simple solution. Addresses it very simply. Let me just read out the portion from Matthew which captures this best. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give His life as a ransom for many. Jesus was basically saying that the best way you can overcome the sinful nature of conflict and comparison and competition is by becoming servants to each other. It is by serving one another. When we serve one another, the gospel comes down from our heads to our hearts. When we start serving each other in community, when we start serving the city together as a community, slowly what was just intellectual knowledge becomes a deeply spiritual and practical experience. Many of us in New City have experienced this. Time and again, I see people who come engage with the gospel, and somehow, miraculously, mysteriously, spontaneously, God births in our hearts a desire to serve. I can tell when God's moving in the lives of people. They come up and say, can I serve in any way? Can I help in the setup? Can I help in setting up the communion? Is there any way I can help in? And that's the proof of God working in us. And as we start serving, for those of us who are followers of Jesus, everything we've known and been taught actually becomes experience. The gospel becomes a real experience for us. And it's in servanthood that we become like Jesus and rise above the conflicts that we will experience. That's pretty much what I have for us this morning in terms of a talk. But the real deal today is not the talk. It's actually the interview that we're going to be doing. All of us have been to school, and if you've been part of the Indian educational system, there are two things. There is the theory, and there are the practicals. You know, what I just did was the boring theory lessons. What we now have is the exciting practical sessions. We're going to be doing an interview with two very special people this morning. And they're going to be very vulnerable to us. They're going to be talking about their own experience with conflict that they experienced. So let me introduce them to us. I want to introduce the first person who's going to be joining us in this panel this morning. She's a lawyer and she's a soon-to-be mom. She's deeply rooted in God's word. She has a sound grasp of gospel theology. She is multi-talented. She can work in a human rights law firm in Mumbai, set up the firm's office in Nepal, be a homemaker and a gracious host, and run a brilliant blog that has over a dozen high-profile and gifted writers, lead worship, preach, help her husband lead a brilliant group at home, and still find time to invest people. Put your hands to welcome Roshni. The next person on the panel this morning is a hotshot PR professional, a celebrity in her own right, a brilliant singer and worship leader, a beautiful wife and homemaker. She's a champion for the rights of abused women. She has a beautiful gift of making the Word of God practical. She is everywhere on social media, not just in her account, but her husband's account, her friend's accounts. She's there all over. And she manages a band, she preaches, she's an excellent communicator, and she's served New City in a million ways. Cindy, Cinderella. Cindy and Roshni have very graciously agreed to have a very open and a very honest conversation on conflict. And I'd like to call them gospel pace setters. A community needs gospel pace setters. Who's a gospel pace setter? A gospel pace setter is someone who repents of their sinfulness quite publicly and enjoys the grace of Jesus. And when others see them repenting publicly and enjoying the grace of Jesus, they are invited to feast on Christ Jesus. And they are invited and they learn to enjoy Jesus. So both of them have been wonderful gospel pace setters. And in light of the way they've been living their lives, I think I'm delighted that they're going to be agreed to just have this very honest conversation. I want to just start with Roshni, perhaps, to begin with. Roshni, could you describe the friendship the two of you enjoy now?
Okay, so I really love Cindy. She's one of my favorite people. And I know that our friendship has actually grown a lot in the last 1 year. She was actually the first person to cook me something when friends of us found out I was pregnant. And she made me my favorite. She made me my bengan ka bharta. And she brought it home. I love her energy. She's someone I've come to really love and admire. I love the way she has a beautiful presence, and I love her heart. And I think over the last 1 year, I've come to love her as my own, as someone who's my person.
I'm going to request Cindy to, you know, talk about how she would view her friendship with Roshni right now.
I think it's extremely meaningful right now. It's extremely meaningful. It's beautiful. I think Rosh is one of the people that I can count on. She's one of my most reliable friends, and somehow she is the one who always encourages me in the areas where I feel I'm not good enough. I remember when we got married and we moved into our new home, Rosh was the one who would constantly check on me. Are you okay? Do you need food? Should I bring something for you? Do you have a bed? Where are you going to buy it from? You know, questions like, I mean, just so sweetly she would check on me pretty much every day. I remember when I was unwell, she was the one who actually found out a doctor. And she forced me to go and meet that doctor and get myself checked. And then we realized that I've got food poisoning. So, I mean, she's one of those extremely thoughtful people. And I'm so inspired by how thoughtful Rosh is and how meticulous she is. Those of us who know her, we know she's super organized. And I hope I get to learn that and adopt that in my own life.
So clearly, this is a beautiful, warm friendship. Rosh, was it always this, or maybe Cindy can take that first. Was it always this warm and beautiful? Were there difficult moments in your friendship?
Actually, no, it wasn't. It wasn't always this warm. It wasn't always this beautiful or meaningful. But I think also, to be honest, I wouldn't have it any other way. It's the difficult moments that have made us as strong as we are today. So, yes, it was tough, but yeah. It's been worth it.
Yeah. Your thoughts on that, Roshni?
I think when I first met Cindy, I think things were going okay, but just somewhere as we spent more time and as we got to know each other, things got really, really messed up. And I think our friendship just disappeared. And I think it was becoming more and more apparent that there was something off. There were quite a few difficult moments which we both had to deal with.
Sure. Cindy, would you like to talk about some of those challenging moments, some of the struggles that you had in the relationship, some of the moments of conflict, what went wrong?
I actually came to New City much after Roshni did. I think I came at least a year later or something, and when I joined New City, when I began to come for the services, etc., I was just discovering community. Yeah. And that was something that I lacked. So I was enjoying it. But, you know, I was new to the community. People were still getting to know me, still getting to see me. And it was tough for me at first because I felt like everyone was accepting me. But Rosh wasn't exactly accepting me the way I wanted her to accept me. She was being accepting in ways that were different. So that was tough for me to deal with. And I think I used to get extremely angry.
Yeah.
Because I used to be like, how can you not accept me? I'm pretty amazing, you know? instead of just sitting back and thinking why or what's going wrong or what am I doing, I was just really angry with Rosh because she wasn't accepting me the way that I wanted to be accepted. And I think that led to a series of events. There was a lot of displaced anger, and it actually never happened when the two of us were alone. It's embarrassing because it happened in full view of the entire community, where I used to attack Rosh, and for absolutely no fault of hers, I used to attack her, and I used to. I mean, there's been a time when I've also disrespected her home. I think underneath all of that, there was a lot of pride. I was extremely proud, and I was like, how can you not?
Yeah.
And I think there was also this, how do I put it? I think it was just the fact that I wasn't able to control the situation or control the way my community was loving me, seeing me, accepting me. I think that was tough. I think that was my idol. That was the stuff that I was dealing with. In a lot of ways, I was worshiping myself.
Roshni, you want to talk about what did this conflict, and clearly there was conflict brewing, what did this conflict look like from your perspective? You know, what were some of the difficult moments you were experiencing during this time?
So I think initially when she was just like checking out New City, it was fine. But the moment she joined New City and she became a part of the community, things just backfired because she was so popular. She's a brilliant singer. She's really talented. And there's a lot that she can do, whether it comes to just hosting or singing or speaking. And even in the way she leads others to Christ. And I know that there were so many people whose lives were changed just by hanging out with her. And I think that made me extremely jealous and insecure. So out of this jealousy and insecurity, I started being really competitive and hurtful towards her. So every time Cindy would make a step forward to come closer to me, I would intentionally push her, move away, or do something to hurt her. And I think I deliberately an extra effort to kind of make Cindy feel like she didn't fit in. She didn't fit into my life.
Yeah.
And I think this created a huge conflict in our relationship because I was operating from a place of insecurity and deep, deep jealousy where I was just so insecure about this other woman who was just suddenly come in.
Just on the same note, at a deep heart level, Roshni, what were some of the temptations that you had to face and fight during this season? And we'll have Cindy answer that question as well.
I think from my personal perspective, in the sense that when it was just me, I think the biggest temptation I had to fight was harboring bitter thoughts against Cindy And when it externalized itself, it became gossip, slander, and intentional hurtful behavior. So I think I did talk about Cindy behind her back. I did say mean things about her. There were times that I was intentionally hurtful to her, either in a group setting or when we were out, or just I would ignore her or do things which are very rude and impolite. And I think I had, for a very long time, a lot of negativity stored up in my heart towards Cindy.
Yeah. What were the temptations that you were facing, fighting, and maybe even giving in to? What were your struggles during this time of conflict?
I think I would sort of resonate with Rosh because gossip was another big thing for me as well. And I would typically do it under the alibi of, you know, I'm bearing my heart. I'm just bearing my heart. I'm just like, you know, being honest and transparent and all that. I think that was something. And I think the other thing, which was the other temptation, which was, I think, major, was to just stay angry at Roshni. Because she actually took a step forward and she asked me out for a meal and she said, you know, let's meet. And we met at a restaurant and she was just so sweet and she apologized to me when I told her that I've been hurt, that I feel sad and etc. She was so, I mean, just so sweet and she apologized quite immediately. And I felt so justified by that apology that I never felt the need to apologize myself. I didn't see that I could have hurt her as well. It actually took a call from Aji. She called me and she was like, you know, you've hurt her too, by the way. It's not like you've not done anything. And that's when it occurred to me that, you know, I have also contributed to this conflict, that it's not that I've been right all through. I think the biggest temptation for me was to stay angry at Rosh and feel justified by that behavior and feel superior because of that instead of just seeing that, no, I've also messed up. I think that, I think there was... there was more because it was just really tough. It was really tough when we would meet, when we would meet in community. And, you know, the kind of community that we are, we're vibrant, we're doing things together, we're meeting on and off. So the negativity between us was just so obvious. The cold behavior towards each other was pretty obvious. And
So I'm sure everybody's dying to know, how did you guys manage to get the friendship back on track? You know, clearly a lot of things were going wrong. How did you guys reconcile? How was this fixed? Yeah, maybe Cindy can go first and then. Yeah, or either way, yeah.
So my husband is not here, but he's the one who used to bear the brunt of most of this. Because I would go to him and I would cry and complain and I would get really emotional and tell him that, you know, I feel this way. And he stood up for Cindy so many times. And he actually told me, he said, you know, you're reading the Bible every day and you're praying, but I don't think you're being transformed by the gospel. And this was the first time I remember Ben, my husband, actually challenged me. And he said that, I don't think you're being transformed by the gospel. Because I knew in my head what the gospel was, but I just wasn't able to let go of my pride. So he actually told me, why don't you spend some time praying about it and maybe something will come of it. And as I took it seriously and I started praying about it quietly, things just hit rock bottom when I started realizing that it wasn't just my attitude towards Cindy, but it was towards a lot of other people that was quite negative. So I had an honest conversation. The mic wants to check. Yeah. So I had an honest conversation with Aji, and we both discussed this, and I managed to get to see the big picture. So all along, what I had been doing in my conversations with others and with my husband, is I had been playing the victim. I had been playing the victim of this big injustice or something like that. And when I started talking to Ben and to Aji, I realized that... Ben, can you hear? Check. Okay.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. So I would keep looking at myself as...
Yeah, let's use that.
I would keep looking at myself as the victim. And when I spoke to Ben and Aji, I realized that actually, in all of this, I had actually been victimizing Cindy. I had been really rude to her. I had not just publicly offended and hurt her, but even privately and behind her back, I had spoken negatively about her. And so what happened was, once or twice, Cindy and me had met. And we had these conversations, but it just didn't do anything to our friendship. So this time, after having this conversation with Aji and with Ben, I remember Cindy and me met. We met at Villa Vandre in Bandra. We ordered some really nice food. And I had probably one of the toughest conversations of my life, where I shared with Cindy how I had been hurt by her. And as I shared, Cindy also shared how she had been hurt by me. And I immediately started justifying, saying, oh, you know, I was going through a bad patch and this and that. But when she shared with me how I had hurt her and those around her, it suddenly occurred to me that actually I had been playing this victim, when actually I felt that I had hurt her a lot more than what I was blaming her of or accusing her of. That I had totally forgotten about the gospel, the Bible or anything. And I was just behaving like a selfish, proud person. And even though we had tried resolving our friendship in the past, I think I was doing it based on my standards and my ego. And it was this meeting which we had at Villa Vandre which helped me see how much I had sinned against her. And it was the first time that I was actually able to see how much I had hurt her and those around us. It took us a while after that. I mean, it didn't happen immediately, but slowly, slowly. Honestly, I think it was by the grace of God. And Cindy says it was a miracle, but with, I think, prayer and both of us slowly, slowly, just very carefully started spending more time with each other, talking to each other, and now she's one of my closest friends.
I think Roshni was making a very interesting point, and for those of us who are married and those of us who do want to get married at some point in time, I think that's something we must recognize. That as husbands and wives, we love each other, we care for each other, we nurture each other, we are tender towards one another. But there's also a time when we must confront and challenge each other. And I think that's what she was explaining in terms of Ben being honest with her, lovingly honest, not crushing her, but being honest and pointing her back to the cross, pointing her back to the gospel. I think that's very, very important in our marriages, which also is a missional community. Cindy, do you want to talk about how you helped get the friendship back on track?
Sure. I think exactly like Roshni was saying, we've tried this in the past. We have tried meeting, I think, twice. Yeah, we tried meeting earlier on twice, and we tried talking about our differences. We tried really a lot, and I think that was our fault, that we tried too much to make it work. We were striving in our own strength. We were trying to force it on each other. I think there was a lot of performance as well, because the way we were behaving with each other was very superficial. It was also fake. I mean, it wasn't heartfelt. Like, every time we would say thank you to each other, I'm not sure if we really meant it in that time. But like Rosh pointed out, after that meeting at Villa Vandre, I think the both of us, because suddenly now the bigger picture was that, you know, we're both at fault. I think up until that point, we weren't able to see that. I wasn't able to see that I was at fault at all. I felt like I was like this amazing girl who the whole world needs to, you know, sort of, yeah. So for me, it was like that. It was pride in a very, unconventional way, I would think. But so when this dawned on me that I was at fault and that, you know, I was also hurting someone else. And I mean, if you know us, you know that both of us are pretty similar in a sense that both of us are, I mean, a ball of energy at all times of day. We're both pretty strong-headed. We're both pretty opinionated. Yes, we like Bombay more than Delhi. We're both... Yeah. We're both very similar in that sense. So for us to come to terms, or for me to come to terms with the fact that, you know, I mean, I was in the wrong, was, I think that was a first step towards a friendship, towards reconciliation of our friendship. I think this time around, I don't think we tried that much. We just realized that we're not able to do this in our own strength. And the funny part is that both of us were and perhaps even are extremely regular at our CBR sharing. So we'd be the ones who'd be sharing every morning on our CBR WhatsApp group. But this area was one which had zero transformation. So it was pretty, I mean, I think for me it was pretty hypocritical that I wasn't.
Sure.
I just wasn't, yeah. I wasn't being honest or just truthful about it. So I think even as we continued in our love discipline of doing CBR, or even as we continued in our gap groups, I think the more we were able to see Jesus,
yeah.
I think that much more we were able to see each other
yeah.
Through the prism of Christ.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think without that we would have been able to do this, because I was thinking I'm too perfect, which I realize I'm not, and I was holding Rosh to a standard, which wasn't my business to really do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that really, really changed. I think our friendship around it really turned it around.
Yeah.
I think this daily prayer and being able to rehearse the gospel on a daily basis just really added. Yeah, it really transformed our friendship completely.
Sure, sure.
I mean,
couple of quick questions.
Sure.
How did the gospel, who Jesus is and what he did for us, how did the reality of that help you in this journey? And what have you learned from it all? We'll probably have both of you answer that. And whatever you'd like to go first, she'd like to go first, yeah.
So obviously I forgot the gospel whenever I was being mean and rude to Cindy, and what happened was, when I actually, once I had this conversation, and around that time when I started doing CBR in the morning, I realized that there's, like, little by little, like an onion, there was this layer that was just layers and layers of the stench of sin being unraveled. And I still remember, so I wrote this in my CBR book. And if you want proof, you're welcome to come home and check. I have the book. So we were doing the passage from Luke chapter 10. And this was 14th January 2016. So I wrote this prayer down in my CBR book. It was, God, help me to be merciful to my neighbor, Cindy. Please replace the garbage of judgment with your divine mercy. I think reading the Bible and just seeing what Jesus had done convicted me so much of how horribly foolish and judgmental I had been, when in turn Christ had been so merciful to me. And actually, Aji helped me see this. She told me, she's like, you know, whenever you feel hurt and when you feel, you know, that someone's done something, why don't you pray and ask God to reveal your sinfulness in that? Which was a first for me, because whenever I'm hurt, I'm actually complaining to God and asking God, hey, do something. But for the first time, I started praying that, hey, would you reveal my sinfulness? And this became my prayer even when I did CBR. So what happened was, as I slowly started seeing this, I realized something. I realized that every time I was rejecting Cindy, I was pushing her away, I was choosing not to love Cindy, I was actually rejecting what Jesus had done, not just for me, but for her, because we both believe in Jesus. We both follow the same Christ. And every time I was rejecting her, I was actually rejecting Christ and saying what you did was not good enough for me to forgive her. And it broke me when I realized that I'm actually rejecting a man who chose to die for me. And because of my selfishness, my pride, my ego, I had actually replaced God by becoming God myself. And my standards became more important than meeting the perfect and holy standards of God. And that's when I just broke. And that's when I said, God, I can't do this. I don't want to condemn her. I don't want to judge her. And which is why I'm asking, please, please change me. And when I said this prayer, I let it go. And I just believed that something God would transform. And what slowly started happening is we both, something like miraculously, our friendship started getting back on track. And when I saw Cindy forgive me, and when I saw her letting me back into her life, when I saw you letting go of everything, it made me think, if anyone had hurt me the way I had hurt you, I don't think I would have had the strength to forgive them or let them back into my life. And when you forgave me, when you said, hey, it's in the past, forget it, I love you, we are friends, I began to understand what it meant when Christ actually
said the same thing to me. So when Cindy said that, she was replicating what Christ said and did for me on the cross. And not only did that change my friendship and my attitude and behavior with her, but it actually radically changed my friendship with my husband. Because it helped me understand what it means to forgive, what it means to have grace and instead of condemning someone.
Your thoughts, Cindy, in terms of how did the gospel help you in this journey?
I think it's extremely humbling to know that I'm at fault. I mean, it's not really a privilege, it's not an honor, it's just humbling, it's just, it's shocking also, and it's challenging, and it's frustrating. It's so frustrating. I remember that season, that patch when, you know, Roshan and I were just not getting along well, and when we were being so fake to each other, and, you know, as New City culture, when we'd meet, we'd hug each other, and we'd say, hi, how are you, and it didn't really mean anything. That was, and then, to making the cut thereafter, it was really tough, and it was really easy also.
Sure.
And I say that because there was very little effort that we had to put really. I think I didn't really put so much effort into us as much as I started realizing that I was at fault. I think the gospel turned the mirror on to me. Yeah. Sorry. I think the gospel really turned the mirror on to me. I mean, for so long, I was just looking at Roshni. I was just looking at her and I was just attacking her. But suddenly, here I was and I was able to see my sin. And it really didn't matter how much I was contributing to a conflict. Yeah. The fact that a conflict existed meant that, you know, I was at fault, equally at fault too. So I think the mirror really turned towards me and I started seeing that despite that, Jesus died for me on the cross. And that was the clincher because here I was, seeing my sin, but not being condemned, not being judged, but instead being valued, justified, cherished, and loved by Jesus on the cross. Not for a moment did I ever doubt that, you know, Jesus wouldn't have died for me on the cross if he knew this is how ugly my heart is. And that was so revolutionary because I was like, man, how could a man who was just so perfect and flawless, in fact, he was the only one who didn't contribute to the conflict, and he was still being so gracious towards me, how could I be a recipient, a selfish recipient of grace and value and not pay it forward? That beat me, that broke me, and I was like, I'm really messed up to not pay it forward. I mean, and I mean, like Rosh said, she was also making so many efforts. She was taking note. I mean, she's the one who always remembers I hate chocolate cakes. She's the one who would always, I mean, so thoughtfully taking care of me, and I had to just simply let go, I
guess. Just one last question. I'm going to request you for one sentence answers, if you can. What have you learned from the experience? One thing that you've learned that you would take away from the experience for yourself?
I think I've learned that I can never be always right. Never be fully right in any conflict. Yeah. If there is a conflict, I have most certainly contributed to it.
Yeah.
And mostly it's intentional.
Yeah.
As much as I would not like to admit it.
Yeah.
Mostly it's intentional.
Vishni?
This entire experience actually taught me to turn to God and ask him to expose my sinfulness, because I think I realized that I was operating from blindness where I couldn't see my sin. And even when I'm hurt, that it taught me that I need to learn to see how I've hurt the other person too.
Thank you. I think they've been very honest, very, very vulnerable, very open. I think we must give them a big hand. Thank you.